Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, one correction from the Campaign Finance Board, which sponsors these debates that we'll be holding over the next week and a half, to something that was said in the last segment. For the first mayoral debate, the candidates must be on the ballot, obviously, in order to qualify for the debate, must have raised and spent $50,000, which is not a lot of money, and must be polling at least 2%. So it's undetermined as to whether some of the people we consider minor candidates in the Democratic race will be in that debate next Wednesday. Maybe there'll be a few more minor party candidates than we thought from what we were talking about before. But those are the threshold points for qualifying for that debate, which is next Wednesday night. Meanwhile, as you've been hearing on the station this morning, there is a decision just out today, a few hours ago, in the stop and frisk case known as Floyd versus City of New York. Judge Shira Shendlin has ruled that the NYPD violated constitutional rights, namely the 4th and 14th Amendments, that's search and seizure and equal protection amendments, in the way they use stop and frisk. Joining me now to talk about the decision and the remedies the judge has ordered, WNYC's Kathleen Horan, our criminal justice reporter who's been covering the trial. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Brian.
And Professor Sam Walker of the University of Nebraska at Omaha, he testified in this case as an expert on police oversight and what kinds of remedies might be applicable in this case. Professor, thank you for coming on with us.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
And Kathleen, for people hearing this right now for the first time, here is a line from Judge Shendlin's decision, quote, "To be very clear, I am not ordering an end to the practice of stop and frisk," unquote. So the policy is not unconstitutional, but the way it's carried out is. Can you make the distinction?
Absolutely. That was never on the table. It was only how the city was carrying out stop and frisk. So she just wanted to make that clear because I think there's been some confusion.
And more from the decision, quote, "It is impermissible to subject all members of a racially defined group to heightened police enforcement because some members of that group are criminals." So, Professor Walker, that makes it sound like the judge has decided that they were profiling.
Yes, it does. And I think the evidence was overwhelming in this case, and the companion Ligon case, and then the Daniels case many years ago.
And what was your role in this case? What did you testify about?
I was the remedies expert, and so I testified that, assuming at that point that the judge would find against the NYPD, what remedies would be appropriate to correct the problems. And I am very pleased that she accepted most of the remedies that I recommended in my report and on the stand. Not all of them, but still, the most important one is that there's a court-appointed monitor to oversee the reforms, which she specifically orders. That's just extremely important.
Professor Walker, did she recommend a particular monitor step in? It looks
yes.
Like she wants to pick the monitor. She doesn't want any haggling over monitors.
Yes, she did. And he's Peter Zimroth. He's from, I guess, the firm of Ardell and Porter. I'm not familiar with him, but he has his record is listed in the opinion, so it's a very impressive record.
Do you think she did that to avoid some of the difficulties that cities have had picking monitors?
I don't want to try to speculate on the judge's thinking, but this clearly speeds up the process. And there's not going to be a search process, an application, and so on. So
she's got the guy. And,
yeah.
And Kathleen, the judge wrote, quote, "In order to conduct a stop, an officer must have individualized reasonable suspicion that the person stopped is committing, or is about to commit a crime," unquote. That is a very different standard than these forms that the police officers were able to fill out after the fact, saying, oh, it was a high crime area, or somebody made a furtive movement, or somebody was wearing the same kind of clothing as a described suspect.
It was very generic, the form. And even attempts to provide a narrative about the reasonable suspicion, officers really didn't fill that out very often. So officers could basically stop anyone, according to the judge, for no reason at all.
212-433-WNYC is our phone number. Some listeners already calling in with reaction to this stop and frisk federal court ruling. 212-433-9692, such as Alan in Queens. Alan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Brian, just wanted to say I love your show and thank you. I just wanted to say this. I just wanted to say thank you to a lot of people who've been putting a lot of work. Jacques Leandre in District 31, who's been doing so many workshops in Stop and Frisk, and also our councilman Donovan Richards, who's also been very proactive in this. I wanted to just ask this question to, you know, your two guests, because I feel there's a missing narrative and dialogue here. I feel that what's going on in neighborhoods, especially Black communities, is you know, we have this particular court case that, you know, basically has been very popular. But the one thing that nobody's talking about is, you know, the voting rates, you know, in these communities. Because I feel like what I'm scared of is that, you know, with this, it's going to make police officers less, you know, it's going to make them, you know, basically like, you know, fall back from, you know, basically trying to do their job. But I really feel
I can
that, you know.
That.
Kathleen, go ahead.
You know, in L.A., they've had a consent decree that they recently completed, and there was a federal monitor, and there was fears about depolicing, that officers would be afraid to, you know, passionately, you know, correctly police.
And we hear it from police officer callers to the show from time to time, where people say, all right, they really don't want us to go out and be aggressive to save lives in their communities. We won't.
But they found that that wasn't true. And
yes, there's actually good evidence on that.
The Kennedy School did a study, and they found that actually crime went down, that police community relations went up, and that everything was more effective. And the NYPD, in this case, may have to be more transparent, which is something that has been a bit of a problem over the years.
Professor Walker?
Yes. Yes. There have been a number of studies of the depolicing controversy, and there's no evidence of it. Again, the study of Los Angeles, crime went down as you know, the LAPD had to adopt, you know, stricter standards for their police officers. Crime went down.
Ricardo in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ricardo.
Hi, how are you doing, Brian?
Good.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm in the streets a lot because I drive a commuter van in Brooklyn. And from my experience, there is a silent majority of minorities in the street in Brooklyn who do not mind the stop and frisk. Because from my experience, I'm not sure what other people's experiences are, but from my experience, whenever I pick up a young Black male, I'm a Black male too, I'm worried until a lot of them come off my van, because people might not know this, but a lot of them do carry weapons, a lot of them do carry guns, and they're real people in real crime situations, and a lot of people are happy when the police actually stop people and search them. A lot of young guys would carry guns just to defend themselves if the police officers didn't do stop and frisk.
Ricardo, thank you very much. Kathleen, this is, I think we've heard from between the last two callers,
The
genuine ambivalence in many communities in the city.
Those are the people who are calling. There's a lot of non-ambivalence out there, too. I mean, in her decision, the judge mentioned the human toll. And she said that, you know, each stop is demeaning and humiliating, and that no one should live in fear of being stopped during daily activities of life. Alienation of these communities cannot be good. And what we've seen is that even as stops have gone down 50% in the first quarter of this year, crime has also gone down. So the city's argument about crime being tied to stops doesn't hold that much water when you see it played out this year.
And listeners, again, we have posted the text of the actual decision from Federal Judge Shira Shenlin on our website. If you want to read the actual decision, you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. WNYC criminal justice reporter Kathleen Horan and Professor Sam Walker from the University of Nebraska, who testified as an expert on police oversight and what kinds of remedies might be applicable in this case. And so, Professor, before we run out of time, we mentioned the federal monitor being appointed to oversee the NYPD in this respect. There were other remedies as well, including a trial program requiring the use of body-worn cameras in one precinct per borough and a community-based joint remedial process to be conducted by a court-appointed facilitator. Do you want to mention anything about those or any other remedies that are in this case?
Yes, the community input section is very important. I testified to that when I was on the stand, and that form of community input is increasingly used in the federal lawsuits against police departments in New Orleans, in Seattle, and it's important to hear the voice of the people who are affected by a police department's policies and to get their input. So this is a fairly new development. It was not included in the earlier federal pattern and practice lawsuits against police departments back in the 90s. So that's extremely important.
Professor, they have this in Cincinnati. Was that the model for the plaintiffs to request this?
Yes, but Cincinnati was unique because there were two separate settlements, and one did call for it was called the collaborative agreement, and there was very heavy community involvement. But that one was the exception among the older cases.
We are just about out of time. We do expect the Bloomberg administration to appeal this ruling and ask for an injunction. Kathleen, do you think this will be halted immediately while this goes up the chain?
They have 30 days to appeal. So nothing's happening immediately, and the mayor and the police commissioner and the lawyer for the city are having a 1 o'clock press conference.
See Kathleen Horn's reporting and the text of the actual judge's ruling at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Professor Walker, thank you so much for adding your voice today.
Thank you.
And more coverage coming up next hour.